And I like you, bro, don't get me wrong.
How are you?
Hi, everybody, I'm Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and my home group is the West Side Men's Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I mean, how do you, how do you go after the plant story? I mean, that was really, it's really a meeting in itself, to be honest with you. This is a second meeting, we're at the second meeting, so let's open with the Serenity Prayer, and let's do another meeting, because that was really a meeting in itself. I mean, how do you even go past that, Shelley? It's unbelievable. I want you to know something that before I get into my story, you know, there's different schools of thought on how to introduce yourself, recovering, recovered, and if you're not drinking and you're having a life beyond your wildest dreams and you're helping other people and you love God, it's right. So whether you call yourself recovered or recovering, if you're having a life beyond your wildest dreams, you're on the right track. It's all semantics. So, you know, there's some people the last week, because they know that I say I'm recovering, and Peter M. said he's recovered. And, of course, I have so much respect for that school of thought, and it's the same God. So let me say that the plant is great. I follow the guy that made the plant. I follow the planter. He's the guy that grows the plants. And it's great, and I have a piece of Bill W. in the big book. And so when I come up here humbly to tell you that I was dead just 12 years ago, not 47. My dear friend Dion has 45. And so just the two men alone in this room right here is, you know, 95 years of sobriety. Wow. Just in two men in this room. If that doesn't just make you go, wow. Then my other friend Eddie Murray has 35. It's three men, brings you up to 120 years. I'm awestruck. I mean, after that, what do you have to say? We're sitting in a shul, talking about God, laughing about being sober. I mean, it's all gravy after that. It's incredible. So I'm blessed. I want to tell you that I had 7 years of sobriety. I came in when I was 22 years old. And I came in through Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't have a problem with alcohol. Never had a problem with alcohol. And it was never a thing for me. And I had a problem with stuff other than alcohol. As a matter of fact, I had a problem with everything other than alcohol. I didn't say no to any of the other stuff ever, unless I didn't understand the question. So I did everything that there was under the sun. There was nothing that I said no to. If I ever said no to it after a couple of drinks, I said yes, of course. So drinking for me was always the end-or. It was always end-or. You know, and I grew up in Long Island, New York, and in a time when, right after the 70s, so drugs were prevalent, and there was always new drugs coming out, and it just depended, and they were cheap. It was easier to use drugs underage, and it was cheaper, so that's just what we did. And by the way, thank you for the reading. I love when you read. You read on last Tuesday, and every single time you read, I think of The Departed. It's just fantastic. I think there's about to be a hit right at that moment. Bing! It's fantastic. You read Why We Were Here. You read Why We Were Here on Tuesday night. It was beautiful. Expected Mark Wahlberg to walk in at any time. So I grew up in Long Island, New York, right, in the 80s, mid-80s, and drugs were so much easier to get if you're underage in alcohol. And so that was my first love. What are you going to do on Friday nights? They always say, whatever the cheap drug of choice was during that time. And then if there was someone old enough, then we got alcohol with it. So then you'd have a whole fantastic night. But for me, alcohol was just an end-or. And at 22, I got addicted to one of those substances other than alcohol. And I came home and told my parents. My parents were shocked. We had never met an addict. We didn't know alcoholics. One guy in our block, he went to AA. He lived in the cul-de-sac in our neighborhood. Mr. Woolley. We knew, we went to AA meetings. I saw people. There was a lady on Archie Bunker. She also had a problem with alcohol. That's the extent of what I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. They sent me to a treatment center when I was 22 years old in Minnesota, and I saw these for the first time. I saw them earlier. Shelley, what did you do with the steps? Yeah, I know, I saw them. So I saw those steps for the first time, and it had the word alcohol in it. I'm 22 years old. I look at the steps. I say to the guy, I'm not here for no alcohol program. I'm here for the Know the Other Substance program. And it was Minnesota, middle of the winter, and I'd never been in any type of 12-step, nothing. Never heard of it. And the guy said, well, we don't drink here. Whoa, what do you mean we don't drink here? I know. I understand we're not going to drink in the treatment center. That's, of course, if I'm not here to drink in the treatment center, that would be ridiculous. But I'm not going to not drink after the treatment center. I'm here for not doing the one substance that my parents called you about. I have a problem with that substance, specific of that substance. I'm not thinking about not drinking. I'm going to drink as soon as I get out of here. And the guy was shocked at my candor. And he goes, well, you can leave now. I go, well, I'm going to leave now. He goes, no, I just told you to leave. I go, I'm going to leave. And being from New York and being, you know, half Jewish and half Italian, I have an attitude with guilt at the same time. So I told him, listen, I'm about to leave. And the guy says to me, well, you could leave. Now, I knew that I had a $25,000 check in my pocket, and where I'm from, the louder you yell, usually you get stuff done. My dad was a big shot in Atlantic City, big shot, high roller. He was involved with organizations. And so I said to the guy, listen, I don't know if you, I'm Stan Boyarsky's son. We know who you are, yeah, of course. And I have a $25,000 check in my pocket. And he said, and he goes, yeah, I understand, but we don't drink. We go to Alcoholics Anonymous here. And that's how, you know, to be honest with you, I didn't come in not to drink. I came in for one thing. And this is what I want to say to you. Usually I tell a joke that I stayed until it thawed out in Minnesota, but I don't want to make this a joke. I want to tell you something. It doesn't matter why you come in Alcoholics Anonymous, as long as you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not come in with a drinking problem in any way. But here I am in AA in the middle of Minnesota, and there's the 12 steps on the wall. The guy says, we don't drink. I says, well, I'm going to give it a shot. I mean, I had no way of getting back. It's the middle of winter. My parents sent me with a one-way ticket. I said, who knows? You know, let's give it a shot. All right, I'm in. And 3 or 4 weeks into it, they take us out of some meetings. They take us to NA. They take us to AA. I joined NA. You know why? Because of the girls. That's what basically I said. AA, old men, NA, hot girls, I'm in NA. So that's what I did. I joined NA, and I stayed clean in NA for 18 months. And I didn't really have a program. Unless dating is a program, that's what I was doing. I'm 24 years old, and you know, I have a full head of hair at the time. I carry hair gel everywhere I went. And, you know, I got my New York stick. I'm in the middle of the United States. They haven't seen anything like me. I'm like, oh, you know, whoa. I'll steal a line from D. That, you know, the kid was here. And this is fantastic. And I had no defense against anything because I didn't develop a God. I didn't develop a relationship with God. I didn't develop a relationship with a sponsor. I didn't develop a relationship with anything other than the fellowship. And the fellowship will keep you clean for an amount of time. I'm not even going to say a limited amount of time. I've seen people stay clean in the fellowship for 10 years. I mean, they were miserable when they're not in meetings or dating. They're miserable. They're trying to fill this God-sized hole inside them with outside stuff, but you can stay clean on the fellowship. Trust me, you can. But like my brother that came up here and received his medallion, who said his dad didn't see him change, and I'm sure he did change. I'm sure he changed a lot. There's a lot of people in the program that don't change, because if you're clean for a while or you're sober for a while, no one's going to get into your face. I happen to surround myself with a bunch of guys, James one of them, Mason, Dion, Nikki, that'll tell me, John, that'll say, hey, Steve, you are not acting right. And I think that is so important to have a band of people around. It takes a village to raise an addict. Let me tell you something. It takes a village to come around you and say, listen, you're not flying straight. And I had that for my first 3 or 4 or 5 years in recovery. And then I managed to phase out those healthy ones out of my life. Because water will seek its own level. So if you're a degenerate, you're going to start hanging around with degenerates. You're going to start pointing your finger at other guys going, that guy's a degenerate. But meanwhile, that's the guy you're hanging around with. So I started to phase out the healthy people in the program in about my 50 year of sobriety that would tell me, hey, Steve, that's not what we do in NA. NAA, excuse me. I wasn't in NAA anymore. At 18 months, I relapsed, and then I joined AA. And now I was looking for recovery instead of discovery, and I started to stay in the program. But about 5 years into the program, I really had worked the steps, some of the steps. And if you're looking, let me just say something. If you're looking to get back the things that you once had, or if you're young like I was, if you're looking to get them for the first time, like I never had anything. I came to the program when I'm 22. It's not like I lost anything. I never had anything. So I'm growing up in AA. I get my first car. I get my first house. I marry the wife of my dreams. I get my first business. I'm getting all my firsts. And I think that's the promises are coming true. Somehow I think the 9-step promises are car, girl, job. I think that's the 9-step promises. That's not the 9-step promises. That's like maybe some gravy. But if that's all you come for, then you're going to eventually have that and it's not going to be enough. Then you're going to need the next car, the next girl, the next job. That's not going to be enough. You know, Russell, my sponsor in Miami, talks about that. He saved up for this car, and he had this brand new Cadillac. And
Camaro.
Oh, is it Camaro?
Pulled up next to a Cadillac with a hot-looking blonde.
All right, first of all, who's telling the story? You know what I mean? You invite me up here from Hollywood. Tell your own stories, then. I'm going to go back. I'm up here. I'm telling the story. So... Dion, is this how they treat people in Boca up here? This is disrespectful. I'm speaking. Would you do this to Peter M? No. Because he'd whack you right in the... All right. Oh, Russell was here 2 weeks ago? Oh, all right. Yeah. All right, well, listen. He doesn't even remember. He doesn't remember. It's 30 years ago. Trust me. I remember. He saved up for a nice car. And it was the car of his dreams. You'll understand what I'm saying. Don't worry about the make of the car. Because if it's Susie Cream Cheese and you're waiting for a beautiful blonde, and you're with that blonde, for a while you're going to be looking over a girl with brunette and you can say, I wish I could have a brunette. If it's the most amazing car that you ever thought and that's the only thing that you've ever wanted, and all of a sudden the more beautiful car pulls up next to you and you have a soul sickness and you've been filling it with stuff, it's not going to be enough when that car goes past you. Listen, Hollywood will tell you right now, there's people that in Hollywood that have more money than you and I will ever have in 5 lifetimes, and they're killing themselves. That we just buried a boy in Hollywood that was the most beautiful boy you've ever seen in your life. He looked like he was chiseled from stone. He looked like he walked out of the Hollywood movies. He was so beautiful, and at 24, he's dead. Because we have a soul sickness that can only be satisfied with a relationship with God. And if we have a relationship with God and we build it over the years, then when no one else is watching and the car's not on and the girl or the guy is not next to you and you're laying in bed, you're going to be enough. If you're not enough at that point, you know to who to ask for when you're not feeling enough. But if you try to fill it with anything lateral, if you try to fill it with anything on this plane, on this earthly plane, it's not going to be enough. And at 5 years of recovery, it wasn't enough for me. I already married the most beautiful Colombian girl that I've ever seen in my life. I already had a business. I had a beautiful car. I had a big screen television. At 30 years old, I was watching the TV in my house and I was saying, look at me, this is incredible. I was already driving around in a triple black, whatever it was at the time, with the top down, with a cigar in my hand. And you know what? That's great during the day when the cigar is lit. But at night, the cigar is going to go out. And then you're going to have something more. You're going to have something behind that, or you're going to be suffering from soul sickness. And that's why we hear people with 15 years, 20 years, blowing their brains out. Because they can't tell anybody around them that they want to die because they have 15 or 20 years. And I couldn't tell anybody at 7 years. I'm 31 years old. I got a gigantic bank account. I got a beautiful wife. And how do you tell someone in the next meeting in AA, who a guy that's sleeping on other people's couches and he's grateful, how do you say to the guy, I want to kill myself? You can't. So usually what you do is two things. You either do kill yourself or you drink. And at 7 years of sobriety, the best thing that I ever did was drink at that moment, because I was ready to die. I was dying inside. It wasn't enough for me, sobriety. Because sobriety without God is just sobriety. I already had that until I was 13. I didn't have a drink. It wasn't enough for me. I was sober from 1 to 13. That didn't work. So at 31, I'm like, is this it? I look over at my wife. I look over at our house. I look over at our stuff. I go, is this it? This is it? And then I start creating wreckage in my sobriety. I'm going to places that I shouldn't. I'm hanging out with guys that says, as long as we're sober, we can hang out with these girls. But yeah, but that's not our wives. It doesn't matter as long as we're sober. This is where we go on Friday nights after meetings. This is what we do. Is this what we do? Is this what we do on Friday nights after meetings? We're hanging out at this place or this place or this place. And I start hanging out with guys that say, yeah, this is what we do. This is what gangsters like us do. I thought we were in AA. No, this is what we do. As long as we don't drink, we could do anything you want. And that worked for some people. It didn't work for me. So I picked up my 7-year medallion in AA. I said, thank you very much. And I went on and had a drink. Because I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I had a problem inside. I was so upset with the world. I was so upset with myself that I needed to take a drink. I don't know if anybody can relate to needing to take a drink in sobriety. I needed to take a drink. Believe me, if you were around me, you would have poured me a drink. I needed to take a drink. And for me, taking a drink means taking a drink and other stuff. So I took a drink and other stuff to calm myself down. And then I was going to meetings, and I'm taking other stuff, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm like, whoa, this is fantastic. You guys sounded more interesting. I'm high. I'm going to meetings. I'm like, whoa, maybe I found the solution here. No wonder people are getting high and going to AA. This is incredible. This is interesting. I'm thinking to myself, wow, maybe I should go to AA. I take a little pilly pill on the side, and everybody's interesting. I have a talkative. I'm chatty mouth. I'm going to meetings. I'm like, ooh, this is fantastic. And that would have been great. If I would have stayed at that level of those 3 months, it would have been fantastic. Except that 3 months in a day, I decide, let me try drinking a little pilly poop and another thing. And then at like 6 months, I'm trying like this, and another thing. And now here's the crazy thing about it. I hadn't had a drink in 7 years. From the time I'm 24 to 31. I start drinking, and I start loving to drink. All of a sudden, I become a guy that loves to drink. All of a sudden, I realize, like right by my house at Walgreens, they sell booze. All the time, I'm buying cards there for my family. I didn't even know they sold booze. Half the Walgreens is booze. I mean, I didn't even know. You're in AA, you don't even notice the other half of Walgreens is booze. I start drinking, I'm like, whoa, the other half of Walgreens is booze. Meanwhile, I got money, I could afford the booze. I'm going inside there, I'm buying stuff over here. I got a friend of mine that's in the room tonight. We were going to different bars around town. We're thinking this is fantastic. I'm singing karaoke all drunk. I'm like, I'm having a ball. Let me tell you something. If it stayed exactly like that, I'm not speaking on Monday night at a temple in Boca for James and Rachel. But I can't maintain that. On any given night, a guy said to me the other day, I ran into him yesterday, and a lot of people in Broward know me. They know me as Stevie B, and I pulled up on a convenience store 2 nights ago, or maybe even last night. Last night was Sunday? Last night. I saw a guy who was getting high in 7-Eleven. He was coming out, and he goes, Stevie B, I'm about to go pick up, and he names the drug. I go, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. There's another way of life. I know I've heard you. You're a great speaker, but I'm going to go pick up this. He thought that he could just go pick up that, and he knew the outcome. We don't know the outcome. You pick up a drink, you don't know the outcome. We're burying people all the time. Young people, old people, different people, just burying them all the time because they think we're just going to go have a drink. And I thought I would just have a drink. And that drink brought me to stuff that I couldn't even believe. Now I'm 32 years old, hanging out in clubs with you 20-somethings. I'm like, what am I doing here with my head bopping up and down? Ooh, whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, how did I get here? A couple months ago, I'm in AA, I'm a little whirling, you know, maybe I wasn't having the best time, but how did I get to 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm doing these raves or rives or something, I don't know what I was doing. I'm spinning around and I'm sweating all over myself, I'm about to explode. I'm 215 pounds and I'm about to explode. It wasn't fun, it wasn't a party, it was misery because I had AA in my belly. I had AA in my belly and it was mixing it with booze. and I wanted to die. And I couldn't get back in. My wife said to me, if you ever have a problem, you got to come back in AA. Now, she didn't know that I had a problem. She had heard me at meetings, and I'm a funny speaker, and she heard, you know, the different stories, like when I got high, and I would roll myself up in a carpet, so I thought it was a great hiding place, and all those things. And she thought it was funny, you know. And so she thought, oh, that's funny, but she didn't think it was funny when it happened in our house. She only knows sober Steve. Now she's living it. She marries me. We have a big AA wedding at 5 years. And in a year and a half into the marriage, I'm drinking Steve. She didn't sign up for that. So she flies off to the country of Colombia because she just needs to take a break. And she doesn't know that I'm doing drugs on the side. She thinks I'm just drinking on Saturdays. So she goes to her family. And while she's away, I relapse into my drug of choice, my original drug of choice. And I destroy the house and, you know. Just horrible. And my parents do an intervention on 9/11, and they come down. We just lost our closest friend. My sister just loses her best friend in the Twin Towers. We lost a lot of people in the Twin Towers, but we lost our best friend. And my parents called me and they said, "Did you hear about Jill? I'm getting loaded in the dungeon of my house. I put up the hurricane shutters in September. No hurricane in sight." I battle in for that. I bring down the hatches. I'm like, this is it. Because there's no way I'm getting this house clean by the time my wife gets home. It's destroyed. You know, so any like good addict, I'm like, or alcoholic, I'm like, I can't clean the house, so I might as well die. You know, that's my logic. I can't get a maid and I can't get cleaned up. I might as well die. So I try to kill myself. I bring down the shutters and I try to kill myself. And I can't kill myself. You know, it's a mortal sin if you commit suicide. So I decide that I'm going to just try to commit suicide, but, you know, not the real way. You know, like try to make a bargain with God. Well, I died while I was using. That doesn't count, does it? And so I can't kill myself. And my parents call me and they said, "Do you hear what happens?" And I'm watching the big screen. And I'm watching the towers fall. And it doesn't register what's going on in me. I got a bottle of booze. And I got all this other stuff. My parents call, say, "We just lost Jill. Your sister just lost Jill in the towers." And I think I'm watching a movie. I go, "What does it have to do with me?" Now, my family knew me, and they knew I would never come up with an answer like that. And they, as all the stuff they had going on in New York, and the plane's not flying, they got in a car, they left my sister there in mourning, and they came down to rescue their only son. And they started kicking down the door on September 15th. And so, here I am, faced with the deal. My parents are there, standing in the door. They raised this beautiful boy. My mother's a doctor, my father's a businessman, my uncle's a doctor, and I'm a drug addict. I don't know how that happened, but here it is. And so they start taking me to meetings, because I was well-connected in Broward, and then I said, "Well, I don't know how it happened, Dad. I just wanted to take a drink." And here's the funny thing about it. My parents knew what a terrible drug addict I was, but in my sixth year, I said to them, "I think I could start drinking." And my parents forgot how bad I was. They were like, "Well, as long as you don't do drugs." You know, they didn't really even understand. My dad was in the program. My mother was like 32 years in OA. And they didn't even really understand. They're like, "Well, as long as you didn't do drugs. As long as you, Stevie, as long as you don't do drugs." So I'm thinking, maybe I can drink again. And so I did. And I became a bona fide alcoholic. I don't know how that works. You never like alcohol, you give it up for 7 years, you become one. I don't. It's weird. But that's what I was. And I'm dying. And my parents start taking me to meetings. And I start breaking their heart now. Because they're in New York and I'm down here. And so they don't really know how bad it is until they start taking me to meetings. And every single day they clean me up and they put me in a shower and they take me into the car. And I go into the meeting and I come out of the meeting. And somehow when they're sleeping, I get high. And so I'm breaking their heart. 72 and 62 years old at the time. They come out of recovery. They start working in my little store that I have to try to keep it open. I'm breaking their hearts. I'm breaking my wife's heart. I'm just a complete bum, disappointment. I can't get it. They bring me to the Fort Lauderdale Hospital. I use again. They bring me to the Transition Treatment Center in Miami. I use again. They bring me to another detox. I use again. They put me in the insane asylum. I use again. Utterly hopeless. All I wanted to do was take a drink. I wanted to have one little glass of wine for my 7 year medallion. We're just going to have a little celebration. Now I'm dying. And this is what I want to say to you. Columbus Day. October 11th. Let's say that's what Columbus Day is. I'm not sure exactly, but it's right around there. Just because I'm Italian does not know that I know Columbus like so fast. But it's around that day. Deanna will probably know. It's around that day. It's October for sure. And I'm in the 7-Eleven right next to the Fort Lauderdale Hospital. I'm about to go there for the fourth time. And my dad's in the car. My mother is not in the car this time. She is done with me. My wife has served me with a restraining order. She's totally done with me. And I'm holding on to the side of one of the aisles, and I'm crying my eyes out, bawling my eyes out, because I don't think I'm ever going to be able to get sober. And I don't know if you've ever been at that place. You just can't get high and drunk anymore, and you can't get sober, and you're utterly hopeless, and you're thinking, what am I going to do? And so I'm holding on to the potato chip row, and I'm just dying there. And a guy comes by and he taps me on the shoulder and he goes, Stevie B, you're going to get back. I promise you, you've helped so many men down here, you're going to get back. And I look at him like, do you understand? I don't know if anybody ever saw the movie Less Than Zero. It just came to me. I've never said this in any talk in my entire life, but there was a line in Less Than Zero when the guy said, you think I'm ready for school right now? And I look at the guy and go, I'm dying over here. And you tell me I'm going to get back. I'm dying. I'm not going to make it. And I would have settled right there for one day not thinking about drinking. One day. And 12 years later, I barely ever even think about drinking. What's amazing is that if we just stay and we start doing things that we don't want to do, and we get on our knees in the morning and we ask God of our understanding, whatever it is at that moment, I agree. I agree with the person that said that you have to have a relationship with the God of your understanding. But I want to say to you, there is God. Now, how you understand him, it depends on where you're at. But it's not some God that we make up. There's God. You see the God of the shul? He's God. And it's our job to find out who he is. He doesn't change because we go from one moment to he's a doorknob, and the next moment he's a Hare Krishna. He's God. We change. We seek him out. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that God does not make hard terms for those that seek him. Our job is to seek him. That's what we do in meetings like this. That's what we do in meetings on Tuesday night. We seek him. Those are God-centered meetings that Rachel and James put together. Only a couple people were there in the beginning, and now you can't get a seat because people want to hear about how to have a relationship with God. And so I started following around this guy, Russell, and I started following another guy named Jerry Bear in San Francisco, and they started giving me a set of directions, and they started telling me to do things that I don't want to do, namely pray. I was a big prayer in emergency situations. I'm a fantastic emergency situation prayer guy. I will, whatever it is, whoever's in the room at the time. If it's my Jewish side of the family, I'm on the floor. I mean, whatever it is, the Christian side of the family, my arms are up and I'm praising Jesus. I mean, who's ever in the room? I'm an excellent emergency prayer guy. But a couple weeks into it, I start to like get lazy, and I'm like, well, I could do it later. I can do it on my, I don't really need to get on my knees. Maybe I could do it on my stomach. Maybe I can do it while I'm sleeping. Maybe I could do it on the way to work. And my sponsor explained to me, how is that saying thank you to God that's keeping me clean and sober if I can't even get down on my knees? It's not about religion. It's about a relationship. And how about having a little respect? I'm like brushing my teeth, praying to God. You're fine. Do it then too. I like to pray when I'm in the car going to work. Do that too. How about starting off the day on your knees and finishing it up on your knees? Can you do that? My sponsor is Jewish, so I thought that, and because I'm Catholic, I thought that maybe I could like pull like a religion thing on him. I said, listen, Jerry, Catholics don't really pray on our knees outside of Mass. And Jerry said to me, "What? I don't care what you people do. You want to stay clean?" I go, yes, Jerry. He goes, then get on your knees or get yourself a new sponsor. That's what I needed. I needed a guy to set me off in a course of action. Then Russell showed me that on page 85, 86, 87, and 88, it starts on the page, it says, on awakening. What does that mean, on awakening? On awakening, Steve. This is what you're going to do on awakening. Here's a perfect set of directions for a guy like you. Two things that I want you to follow. On awakening and upon retiring. Do you think you can do that? What if I get him confused? That's why you need to have a sponsor, Steve. I mean, I couldn't even get those set of directions. What if I read upon retiring in the morning? Just read something, Steve. Just read something. I needed to have a real strong sponsor, two of them. I'm not saying everyone has to have two of them, but I needed to have two of them. I had Russell and Jerry Bear. And they set me off on a course of action. They started to tell me to seek God the way that I used to seek drugs and alcohol. And that's what I've been doing. I know that we have to end the meeting, I'm sure. No disrespect to the plan. However, I want to tell you that, listen, I want to tell you, make a list. Make a list. Lori, you know what I'm talking about, Lori. You're unbelievable. I was on a cruise with Lori 5 years ago. I don't want to embarrass her. But she is like transformed. The woman transformed herself in the middle of her life. She's like, she looks younger than 5 years ago. You can, if you have a dream, you can do it. If you have a vision, you can do it. You know, our other book says that lack of vision, people perish. I had a vision, and I knew inside me that I wanted to have a child. And my wife wanted to have a child more than anything in the world. I'm not going to start with this whole thing because I could already see me getting all verklempt. And it's going to be, let me just say that we couldn't have a child. Okay? And I knew that God said to us that we could have a child. And we finally got pregnant. And then we couldn't have, then that child wasn't born. And I thought to myself, I'm never going to be able to get through this. I won't be able to get through this. How do you be sober? How do you be worshiping God? How do you be going to church? How do you be running Bible studies? How do you be sponsoring men? And God takes your baby. It's not right. And after some coaching and Mason understanding, everyone understanding me, and finding out that God doesn't take your baby, that these things happen in the world, I was able to get to a meeting that day. And my wife was able to get to a meeting, and we carried on the best we could. And we went to an adoption agency, and the adoption agency took our money, and everything was going good. I said, I have some felonies. Not that I have some felonies, but I have some arrests. And they said, that was fine. But then at the end of the adoption process, they saw that I had a charge for solicitation of a police officer. In my previous sobriety, I was such a great guy that coming out of a meeting, I tried to pick up a police officer. And I was arrested. That's very funny over there. You know what's amazing? Is that the girls in the front row are like laughing. Thank you so much for your compassion. And your understanding. So, Boca's rough. You know what I mean? Boca's rough. You're not going to get a lot of tears in Boca. Like, we heard that story already, Stevie. Anyway, I'm sitting there, my wife is sitting there, she's crying. The guy from the adoption agency says, you're not going to be able to adopt in the state of Florida, Steve. You're just not going to be able to adopt. And we don't know which way to turn, but I know that God wants us to be parents. I feel it in my heart. And we called up this woman, Mindy, for Boca. A beautiful Jewish lady. She comes down to our house. And this is no disrespect to anybody in shul, of course, but I just want just a part of the story. We happen to have a life-size picture of Jesus on the wall that a friend gave us, Mason's friend Eddie, and it's life-size. And I know that Mindy's coming down from Boca to, like, interview us. And I say to Sandy, you know, maybe we could take the picture of Jesus off the wall. I mean, it's okay to be Christian, but, I mean, do we have to be over the top? You know, do I have to wear the big pontiff thing? I mean, we don't have to be over the top. And Sandy says to me, we are who we are. And Mindy comes in and she sits down. And Dee, I don't even know if I told you this part of the story. She happened to be a friend of yours. And she said to me, she reads my thing and she says to me, do you think Jesus would give you another chance, Steve? I said, I know he did. She said, so how could I not give you another chance? And she signs off on a paper for us. And that would be an amazing part of the story. But I want to tell you something. It takes 4 years sometimes to adopt a child after you've been approved in the United States. 60 days later, we're in a hospital room right at the top of the United States. And we're meeting the mom of our son. And he's just born. And she says to us, I want you to raise this child as your own. And I want you to name him. And we were able to name him. We spent a week with her. 3 days later, she gave us that child. We then spent the next 2 weeks with her, visiting her, being with her. And then 2 weeks later, we flew home to Florida, and Joshua was 14 days old. And I want to tell you something, that there's nothing in the program we can't do as long as we put God first, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with that, and serve others. Thank you so much.
Thank you.